Hall of Famer Adam Oates, now analyst on CBC, joins us. Adam, how you doing?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Good. You ever break your jaw?
Yeah, yeah.
And when you did, could you come back and play in like a week later?
You know what? I did. I think it depends on what break. You just said you had a couple teeth removed. Like, by the way, that doesn't feel good when that happens. let's get that straight.
Yeah.
But you know, I fractured my nose plate and my orbit bone on the, and a little bit of the jaw. And it was, you know, it was very small and I played with like protection, but it was at the end of the year. There's only a couple games left. We were trying to make the playoffs. So, you know what, I don't know the degree. I agree. It kind of looks a little weird, but, you know, I'm not going to argue with it.
Adam, I want to get your thoughts on coaching. As a guy who was an assistant coach and then finished the last few years as a head coach, I've had a lot of coaches over the years who tell me, you know, depending on your personality, you're a head coach or you're an associate or assistant coach. Would you be willing to go back to being an assistant or associate if the offer was there, or do you feel that you're more a personality of a head coach?
You know what? That's a good question. Quite honestly, right now my mind is I want to be a head coach. You know, I had a couple years at it, and obviously when you get fired, you know, you have mixed emotions and, you know, you want another opportunity. You want to keep improving at every position, at every level. You know, I want to improve as a coach, and I'd like another opportunity at it because I think I can do the job.
What was the biggest difference being the head coach from an assistant coach that maybe caught you off guard as far as always having the final say on everything?
The biggest, you know what, the biggest difference is when you're the assistant, you're trying to be in your boss's mind. Like you want to finish his sentence every night. So like every decision he makes, you're thinking the same thing. And as the head, you just have more responsibilities. You have a few more sleepless nights because at the end of the day, it is your call, every single decision.
Well, see, as a head coach, how do you describe your sort of coaching philosophy and approach to players? I mean, a lot of guys talk about being a hard guy or a player's coach. Where would you fit in?
I like to think I'm in the middle. I would say that if you look at the Rangers coach right now, I'd like to put myself in that category. AV, you know, a guy who, you've watched him, he's very calm. He's obviously in control. He teaches, he talks. I think you don't have to raise your voice to get your point across. Mm-hmm. And I think the athletes nowadays are different than, say, when I played.
I agree.
Where coaches were harder, and they had, you know, you're talking about guys with long-term contracts now. The power struggles a hair different. You know, you talk about even parenting. You know, parents can't spank their kids anymore. It's different. I mean, the rules have changed. So I think you can look at a guy, and if they know what you're thinking and you can communicate well, then they know when you're upset. They do. You know, you got to be able to teach. You got to be able to communicate what you want on the ice, because at the end of the day, that's what it's about. The players, when they all talk amongst themselves, they will say he knows what he's talking about or he doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Adam Oates joins us. Adam, portraying that teacher aspect across the players, I'm sure is a learning experience. When you look back on your time as a head coach, what do you feel you learned about yourself and the areas that you want to improve on as a coach?
You know what? I think the one thing I learned is you got to try and make changes faster. If you want to establish a culture, if you want to establish changes, you got to do it as soon as possible. Don't try and wait. I would say for myself, I kind of had thoughts in mind and I thought it would kind of go gradual. And, you know, this year, because we didn't make the playoffs, obviously the situation changed. So in my mind, I think some of the decisions I have to make or rules have to be quicker.
And that's
establish that culture a little quicker.
Yeah, and that's a great point. When you come in, because I'm sure in hindsight, you look, say, well, I didn't want to be too assertive to maybe lose the guys, but ultimately as a head coach, it can be very finicky. The timeline might only be a year or two. Did the conversation, obviously I remember your when you got let go in Washington, you were kind of surprised that you thought, well, man, I thought I would have gotten more time. Did you ever have a conversation like with your general manager to say, okay, like we have a 3-year plan, and is that why you felt you would be given more time?
No, not so much that. You just, the first year I coached was coming off the lockout. We had a good ending. This year, I think we had some circumstances that kind of hurt us a little bit. We had a couple key injuries that hurt. The Olympics kind of affected us a little bit afterwards. So I thought we had some good moments, but we were inconsistent. And at the end of the day, they didn't like it. And I understand that. It's part of the job.
Adam Oates joins us, Hall of Fame. We're going to get into the Stanley Cup playoffs in a second, Adam. And, you know, it's rare we have a Hall of Fame player. It's, you know, a lot of the really gifted offensive guys never went on to be NHL head coaches because some people can't see the game the way you do. Why were you successful, and why do you think you've been able to translate what you see and then teach it to other players?
You know what? Because as a player, my game did not come easy. Even from as a little guy growing up, I was always that kid that had to struggle to make a team. I was never the guy that was captain of every team or the star of every team. It just kept rising up the ranks. I had to learn a lot along the way. I'm a very analytical person. My father was, so he taught me to think outside the box. And as a player, I played it in the fighting era. I played in the change of time. I got benched. I got hurt. I got old. I got sat out. I had some success. So I felt like, I wore every hat. And when you do, you kind of interact with every guy along the way. And you know what? I think I can communicate with the good players and with the guys that don't get as much ice time and are looking to move up the ladder.
What was the best part of coaching Alex Ovechkin, and what was the biggest challenge?
The biggest challenge is to... I guess the biggest challenge is you're fighting a lot of years of habits. But I can honestly say to you, it was a lot of fun to coach the guy. We have a great relationship. Mm-hmm. He's very receptive to everything we talked about. We never fought about what I said. And it's funny because one of the things was, he wanted to be double shifted. And I said, you got to play harder because Nick Backstrom's tired. And if he's tired, I can't double shift him. So you got to play better. And he would always agree with that. Like we never fought with stuff. He's got some skills that I've never seen before. And I think he's a great guy. He's got to learn a little bit some habits, obviously. And you're fighting some uphill battles. That's about it.
Adam, a lot of skill players. I remember a few decades ago, Steve Yzerman, people always just too offensive, and then they didn't trade him to Ottawa. He wins the Stanley Cup, and then he's considered one of the greatest leaders of all time because he just learned a little bit how to be more defensive. You being an offensive-minded guy, it probably understands how a lot of guys don't want to accept the defensive game. And nowadays it's even more important, maybe too much at times, to make that transition. Ultimately, I know it's on a player, but how do you feel as a coach, whether it's Ovechkin or young guys here in Edmonton or young skill guys coming up in the draft, to get them to really understand the benefits of two-way play?
You know what? I think Stevie's a great example. Awesome. Cause I played with him for 4 years, and I used to always laugh at that because I don't think he ever really changed his game that much. I think that the team got a little better around him. So all of a sudden things fell into place. He was a great player when I played with him, all of a sudden you had a Fedorov, you had a Lindstrom, and you had all those players that all of a sudden the team got that much better. And it's funny how he got a little bit better. Right.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, like you look at Alex, for me, guys get older, they mature a little bit as well. You got to factor that in. Everybody's game matures a little. But I would also say that if you look at the four teams that are still playing right now, there is a common denominator in all four teams. They've all got good goalies and good defense. You got Lundqvist and McDonough and Girardi. You've got Price and Subban and Markov. You got Quick with Doughty and Mitchell, and you got Crawford with Keith and Seabrook. I mean, everybody's got a common denominator, and everybody plays tempo hockey, controlled hockey, two-way hockey, everybody. And though those four teams do, they have their strengths and weaknesses, but you got to be a complete player. You got to play both ends of the rink. You got to, and it is at times a track meet, I think in Edmonton, for example, you got a lot of great forwards that if they can learn to play under control in their own end a little bit, you know, they'll get more points offensively if they do.
Adam Oates joins us. Adam, let's get to analyzing these series. Montreal, New York, and literally like a centimeter away, if Galchenyuk's shot is on the inside more, it's 3-2. They win that game, and all of a sudden they go to Montreal, and it's tied at 2. The Habs really haven't got dominated since Carey Price has gone down, but they're down in the series now, 3-1. If they're going to win tonight, what is the one key the Habs have to do tonight to be victorious?
You're taking my lines for my comments tonight. You know, you kind of just said a little bit of what I'm going to say. They have not been dominated. The margin of error is so small. The last two games, they have played very well on their own end. The Rangers have not got a goal off the cycle, off the forecheck, off of containment in the Montreal zone. All the goals have come from up ice mistakes. So that's fixable. You can fix your mistakes. You know, the second goal was a bad change. Well, you can obviously, that happens to everybody, but you can fix that. You can fix the reads, right? So in two games, they have not given up anything really in their own end. It's all been in front of them. That is a fixable thing. So I think as a coach, that's a lot easier to sell your players because they're not getting dominated. They're not. They got to control their up ice reads. Simple as that.
Their power play, Adam, you know what? They got a lot of opportunities. Couldn't take advantage of it. What small tweaks would you recommend in their power play right now?
You know what? You know, they had 8, which is a lot, and they have a good power play. They've had a good power play for a couple of years. You know, they struggled a little bit. They got one at the end. PK's goal was a good power play goal. You know what? That's one of those things where every team has their own little adjustments. So not being a part of Montreal and knowing what theirs is, it's kind of hard to say.
Moving to the West, the Los Angeles Kings, Adam, in 2012, they couldn't score in the regular season. They get to the playoffs, and they score, and they obviously win. Now, 2014, they were the lowest scoring team going to the playoffs, and now they're the highest. I thought you couldn't just flick a switch. How is this team able to become so dominant offensively at the most important time of the year?
You know, I think, one thing for sure is confidence. You know, they're a team, they're down 3-0 to San Jose, and they come back. That takes a lot of character. I mean, tremendous amount of character. And that's what winning a cup will do for you. They got a fantastic goalie. They got good defense. They play physical. They pound you night in and night out. They're a tough team to play against over a 7-game series. And, you know, right now I think they are getting a little bit of puck luck. I think they that goes along with confidence, and they're scoring a lot of goals.
They're just so big. Like, offensively, their top nine's the biggest in the league on average. Their defense is the biggest. You were one of the guys who was able to be successful not being overly big, Adam, but it seems nowadays if you don't have a combination of at least 4 or 5 skill guys with size up front and then a few big skill bodies in the back end, you just can't compete.
It makes it very hard, no question. You know, and every once in a while, a team gets lucky enough to put some guys together and some young guys come up and add to their lineup. And you know what? I never would have thought that Richards would be on the fourth line. I mean, that's unbelievable. But they've been lucky enough to do it, and they're riding it right now. And you know what? They're playing a lot of confidence. And they're you know, we played them late in the year twice. We lost to them in the shootout, and they beat us back late. And I thought they were the best team that we played down the stretch. And they kind of have every option. They do.
Adam, I want to take you back to 2001, 2002, when you were with the Washington Capitals, and you had a young Brian Sutherby, my co-host here, coming in as a rookie. What were your impressions of Suds coming into Washington camp?
That's gonna be good.
I just remember, man, is he skinny? Yeah.
Can't say that anymore.
Oh, really? Yeah, we all get older. That's
yeah, no kidding.
Suds talked about how that team was a very veteran team, and he was 19 and really young, and you know it was hard to fit in. How hard is it when you have a veteran team to make young guys feel comfortable?
It shouldn't be hard to make them feel comfortable, but it definitely it is hard to fit in. You know, my experience over the years, you know, most hockey players are good guys, and everybody gets along. You know, you have your hiccups along the way, but almost everybody gets along. I would hope Brian would say the same thing about our team was, you know, we had some good guys, and it, it was coming off a team that had gone to the finals, so mm-hmm. we did have a lot of veteran guys.
Yeah, it was definitely an older team. You know, we were just talking in the break, and being 19, I think that was, I think we were the oldest team in the league that year, and Halpy was 26 at that time, and he was the next youngest guy. So, you know, for me, it was a learning experience and a lot of fun, but interesting with such a dynamic of older guys.
Yeah, that's a very old team. I remember that.
One last one for you, Adam. We look ahead. It's 3-1 both in the East and West. And based on how these playoffs have gone, there's no guarantee that you know, the teams down 3-1 are going to lose. But Rangers and the Kings, if those two teams go, we'll have Quick Lundqvist. That's probably a soft in goal. Who would you like in the Stanley Cup final and why?
Listen, anything can happen. A goalie can steal a series, as we know. Both teams are good. Both teams will be riding high. You know, I think there's a combination of who's the healthiest going into that series would be one thing. I guess I'd have to give the edge with L.A. because they've been there before. They have tremendous resolve. And we just talked about how they can do everything on both ends. And I think they can, you know, I think they can stifle the Rangers. But, you know, I'm flipping a coin. This is a guess.
And are you an NFL fan, Adam? Do you have a team you cheer for?
Yeah, I like that. I've always liked Peyton Manning, so I like Denver.
I like Denver, okay. Because Sotheby doesn't have a team, so we're encouraging people to sell him. And by the end of the show today, he's going to pick an NFL team and actually become a fan of one. So you would you would say Denver?
Noted.
Oh, okay. Well, Hall of Famer cheers for him.
I've always been a fan of Peyton Manning because, I mean, what a tremendous professional he's been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You gotta like him and wish him well.
He's not bad. And one last one, Adam. You mentioned you want to get back to the head coaching ranks. I know you're working on CBC right now. Do you contact the teams that are available, or do you wait until they contact you that have vacancies?
It's a combination. You have an agent, and they talk, and it's typical to like every other kind of situation with a player, a free agent type thing. You know, you have an agent, and he talks to the general manager, and they communicate.
Adam, we really appreciate this. Enjoy the work you're doing on CBC. Thanks for your time.
Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.